بسم الله الحمد لله والصلاة والسلام على رسول الله. إن شاء الله today we will finish the chapter of fasting because we will have to finish the chapter of fasting today so that we start the chapter of Hajj إن شاء الله or the kitab of Hajj next time إن شاء الله. We did finish the different types of people that are exempt from fasting last time, and we did talk about the sick, the menstruating, and one in postpartum, that one having postpartum bleeding or postnatally. We talked about the pregnant and nursing or breastfeeding, and we talked about the elderly, and the one with permanent sickness takes the ruling of the elderly. And we said that if you have something permanent, then your expiation will be only by feeding a poor person per day that you did not fast. If you have something transient, then you would wait until you make up for the day. The thing that is somewhere between the transient and the permanent is the pregnant and breastfeeding. And we said the position of Abdullah ibn Abbas, may Allah be pleased with him. It's not like it's wrong to say, may Allah bestow mercy on him, by the way. But this is to distinguish the Sahaba. But you can say, may Allah be pleased with the Shafi'i. May Allah bestow mercy on Ibn Abbas. Because bestowing mercy is not a bad thing at all. You know, it's not anything, it's not like a downgrade. May Allah bestow mercy on everyone. The Prophet ﷺ even said that none of you would enter paradise on the merit of his own works. He said, even you, O Messenger of Allah, he said, even I, except if Allah تغمدني الله برحمته, إلا أن يتغمدني الله برحمته, except if Allah bestows his mercy on me. But we want to, it's just a matter of honoring and distinguishing the Sahaba of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, and that's why we say, may Allah be pleased with him, رضي الله عنهم. And when we talk about the people who came after, we say, may Allah bestow mercy on them. Sometimes you find the scholars using, may Allah be pleased with them, if they are so grand, like, you know, Abu Hanifa and Malik and Shafi'i and Ahmad, or Sa'id ibn Musayyib and Sa'id ibn Jubayr, or, you know, the very, very big names. Yet most of the scholars would prefer that we keep, may Allah be pleased with them or him or her, to the companions, radiallahu anhu. Okay, so Abdullah ibn Abbas, may Allah be pleased with him, said what is understood to mean that the pregnant and breastfeeding does not need to make up, only needs to expiate through feeding, and does not need to make up. And we said that this, and but the four scholars, the four madhahib, say that she needs to make up and expiate. If the makeup was, you know, makeup and expiate, if she deferred the makeup until the next year without a reason, but if she made up within the same year, it will just be makeup. And the reason why that this is an issue of disagreement is because the pregnant and breastfeeding is actually somewhere in the middle between those who have permanent incapacity and those who have transient incapacity. Permanent incapacity, the elderly, the one who has diabetes, it's really not expected that you will recover from diabetes. The one, unless they find, you know, the cure. But in general, if you have diabetes, it is likely that you will continue to have diabetes. And if it is that type of diabetes that will prevent you from fasting, then all you need to do is to feed a poor person per day. But you don't need to make up because you're not expected to get better. But if you have a cold or if you have, you know, something that is transient, then you will need to wait until you make up. The pregnant and breastfeeding is in the middle because, yes, it is not permanent. She's not going to be pregnant for the rest of her life. But if you take in consideration the fact that she'll be pregnant and pregnant and pregnant and pregnant 4 or 5 times, and then she'll be breastfeeding and breastfeeding. So, you know, 2 years of breastfeeding after 1 year of pregnancy, that's 3 years. If you do this, like multiply this by 4 or 5, that'll be 12 or 15 years of her life pregnant and breastfeeding. And it is some kind of hardship, particularly if she has more than 5. You know, let's say she has 10. it will constitute some degree of hardship. That's why it's a controversial issue, and that's why many believe that the stronger position is that for the pregnant and breastfeeding, they only need to feed. They do not need to make up. Now, he says, after he talked about those different four types and we made the distinction between the temporary and the transient, he says, and as for the rest of those who break their fast, they should make up only except for the, should make up. So the expiation is only to make up. You broke your fast, you need to make up for that day by fasting another day. Except for the one who broke his fast through intercourse or by intercourse, sometimes you have to use the right word. You have to use the accurate word. Because if I use conjugal relations here, what's conjugal relations? If you use conjugal or marital relations, what is marital relations? It could result in confusion if you do not use the word intercourse and you try to be politically correct. But then it would result in confusion because conjugal relations is intercourse and many other things. But you want to say that this pertains only to intercourse, not to all of the other things. So you need to be accurate and precise. So if one breaks his fast by intercourse, then that person will need to expiate by freeing a slave. And if he doesn't find one to free, then he needs to expiate by fasting 60 consecutive days, back to back. It's not 3 days here and 3 days there, back to back, 60 consecutive days. And if he cannot do this, then the expiation will be feeding 60 poor individuals. And we did mention the hadith of the Prophet when the man came and he said, I can't, until the Prophet ﷺ gave him the food for himself and his family. And then if he had intercourse and did not expiate until he had another intercourse, then one expiation only is upon him. And if he expiated and had intercourse a second time, then a second expiation is mandatory. In other words, he ruined one day in Ramadan by having intercourse with his wife. And then before he expiated, he ruined the second day. How many expiations? Just one. But this one is really not light. It's 60 days of fasting. Or freeing a slave if he ever found one. But then if he breaks the day and then expiates and then breaks another day next year, for instance, or breaks a day and expiates by freeing a slave and then breaks another day, then he frees another slave or has another expiation. وكل من لزمه الإمساك في رمضان فجمع فعليه كفارة. And for everyone who is required to abstain from eating and drinking in Ramadan, and then he has intercourse, he must expiate. Which expiation? The expiation of intercourse. That is controversial, and that is likely not the strongest position. But what is everyone who is required to abstain? That is someone who is not fasting. Why is he required to abstain? There is no one who is required to abstain if he's not fasting. That's the stronger position. But then there is this position, which is a very legitimate position. It's actually the position of the majority, that you need to abstain if you're not fasting if you are a traveler and you came back. You don't have to be fasting because you are a traveler, but you came back before Maghrib. Then they ask you to abstain until Maghrib. Likely, you do not need to abstain. Therefore, likely, you do not need to expiate. Okay? If you were a child and you reach puberty in the middle of the day, one of the signs of puberty that can happen at once is what? Ejaculation. So if you're a child and you did not, you went to sleep and you were not fasting, you're a child, you didn't have to fast, although kids should be trained to fast. But let's say you did not fast and you woke up and you had a wet dream. Then you're now adult. Because what's puberty in Islam? It's reaching the age of 15, according to the majority, or ejaculation of semen / menstruation for women, or what? The growth of pubic hair, which happened to be medically very what physicians go by is the growth of pubic hair. Standard staging is based on the growth of pubic hair. So you went to sleep and you woke up, you had a wet dream, then they would ask you to abstain from eating and drinking. Because even though the fasting does not count for you, it is Ramadan and you're now an adult. It is Ramadan and you're now a resident. You came back from traveling. It is likely not the strongest position. If it does not count for you, it's not upon you to fast. Then he says, وَأَخَرَ الْقَضَاءَ لِعُذْرٍ حَتَّى أَدْرَكَهُ رَمَضَانٌ آخَرٌ فَلَيْسَ عَلَيْهِ غَيْرُ الْقَضَاءِ. And he who defers وَأَخَرَ الْقَضَاءَ لِعُذْرٍ حَتَّى أَدْرَكَهُ رَمَضَانٌ آخَرٌ فَلَيْسَ عَلَيْهِ غَيْرُ الْقَضَاءِ. And he who defers the makeup for an excuse until the next Ramadan comes in, nothing is upon him except the makeup. And if he procrastinated without an excuse, then he should feed one poor individual per day. Now, you missed 3 days in Ramadan. You broke your fast on three different occasions in Ramadan, three different days. You were traveling for some reason. Ramadan is over. You have 11 months to make up. You should make up within the 11 months before the next Ramadan. Let's say you procrastinated and the next Ramadan came in and you had not fasted your 3 days that you had to fast. Then the fatwa of Abu Huraira and Abdullah ibn Abbas and Ibn Umar as well, which is not contested by any of the Sahaba, is that the next year you have to not only make up, but feed one poor person per day. That is when you have two different expiations here. You fast and you feed one poor person per day. If you procrastinated and you did not do the makeup within the 11 months. And that is the position of the four mazahib. Now, and if he deferred the makeup until he died, then there is nothing on him, and if it was for no excuse, then one poor individual should be fed per day on his behalf. Except if the obligatory fasting was a vowed one, then someone will fast on his behalf. Likewise is the ruling for every vow to do righteousness. If you are the principal heir of someone, wali al-mayyit, principal heir of someone, and that person had a debt, you need to pay off that debt. He was indebted to someone, you need to pay off the debt. This is a debt that they owed to Allah. You pay it off by fasting. The other position is that this is applicable to any fasting that is mandatory, even if it is the fasting of Ramadan. Because there is a hadith in which the Prophet ﷺ said, مَنْ مَاتَ وَعَلَيْهِ صِيَامْ صَامَ عَنْهُ وَلِيُّ. مَنْ مَاتَ, he who died, وَعَلَيْهِ صِيَامْ, there is fasting mandatory upon him. فَلْيَصُمْ عَنْهُ وَلِيُّ. Let his wali, principal heir, fast on his behalf. So this hadith is clear. Therefore, the scholar said the general statement of the hadith does not distinguish between fasting that is vowed or fasting that is fasting of Ramadan. So any mandatory fasting that is upon you that you did not make, if you die, your principal heir should fast on your behalf. What nullifies fasting? And I want you to follow the principle here, because many times the scholars give examples for people to be able to recognize patterns, not to necessarily memorize the examples. To memorize the examples is not a bad idea, but if you memorize the examples and you do not understand the connecting thread between the examples, you will never be a jurist. You will never be a faqih. You will never have good understanding, because you're a parrot. You just repeat the examples. What if you're confronted with some other case, you'll be at a loss because you do not know the principle behind the examples. Therefore, the recognition of patterns and the recognition of the principle is important. Let me give you a very good principle that you can go by here. It's controversial, but many of these issues are controversial. But the principle that I think is a golden principle is that breaking the fast by consensus is through eating and drinking and intercourse, right? By consensus. Anything else other than eating or drinking or intercourse is controversial. So breaking the fast can only take place if you do something like eating, drinking, or intercourse in form or in outcome or meaning. In form or in meaning. What do I mean by this? If you eat dirt, is this like eating? You eat dirt. If you eat plastic, if you eat that DVD. Some people do. Is this like eating? In form, yes, then it breaks your fast. If you have IV glucose, is this like eating? Yes, this is like eating in outcome or effect or meaning, because you're giving yourself a nutrition. No matter how you give it into your body, it is nutrition. It will keep you from being hungry and keep you from being thirsty. So that violates fasting in effect. And then just keep this in mind. So the violation of fasting could be done in meaning or in effect or in form. And keep this in mind. So he says here, whoever eats or drinks or gets anything, and you know, I found the one scholar who had this very well formulated is al-Kasani in his book Bada'a al-Sana'a. It's a Hanafi scholar. His name is al-Kasani, Alauddin Kasani, and he said this in his book Bada'a al-Sana'a, and I truly liked it because it does solve many problems, and if you just give it to the student of knowledge, he can then be at ease. Because otherwise you're anxious. Does this break or not break? Just remember, if it is like eating or drinking or sex in effect or form, then it breaks your fast. So whoever eats or drinks or gets anything to his stomach through his nostrils or through any other route, or intentionally vomits or masturbates or kissed or touched the opposite sex, and subsequently ejaculated semen, or had mazi, which is penile discharge, that is different from semen, prostatic secretions. Or had hijama, which is cupping with bloodletting, or did it to someone else, intentionally and while remembering that he is fasting, his fast becomes nullified. Okay. So what is the consensus? Where is the consensus here? Drinks or eats? Consensus, right? Gets anything to his stomach through his nostrils. That is almost a consensus. The only one who disagreed here is Imam ibn Hazm. May Allah bestow mercy on him. But he was wrong in this particular case. Imam ibn Hazm is one of the greatest imams. But in this particular case, he was wrong. Because the Prophet ﷺ said about sniffing water, استنشاق, sniffing water into your nostrils. وَبَالَقْ فِي الْاسْتِنْشَاقِ إِلَّا أَن تَكُونَ صَائِمًا. And sniff water far into your nostrils, except if you're fasting. Sniff water far into your nostrils. This is medically helpful, by the way. You find a lot of those nose sprays, and just water. They spray water in their noses. Pretty much استنشاق, you know, in the pharmacies and so on. Actually, a friend of mine did his master's on this particular issue. He had like two different branches, but he had two different subsets of people who pray and make wudu, and people who do not pray, do not make wudu. And he studied the prevalence of allergies within the two groups, and he found that people were, and particularly symptomatology, the severity of symptoms. Between the two groups, and he found very significant results. You know, the people who actually mixed in shaq are very likely to have less severity of the allergic symptoms. Because you're basically washing your nostrils. So the pollens and all of the dust mites and so on that accumulate in your nostrils, if you're not making a stencha, you're just leaving all of this inside you. And that is certainly unhealthy for your nostrils, it's unhealthy for your sinuses, and so on. So the Prophet ﷺ said, and sniff water far into your nose, in nostrils, unless you're fasting. So what does this tell you? It tells you that do not do it if you're fasting far into your nose, because it can break your fasting. And that is the position of the four madhahib, but that is not the position of Imam Ibn Hazm. May Allah have still mercy on all of them. So, why the nostrils? Is it like eating in form or meaning or effect? It is like me eating in effect, because whatever you get to you through your nostrils will really get to your stomach. In fact, it is one of the feeding routes for physicians, nasogastric tube, nose to the stomach. You feed people through their nose. So it's one of the feeding routes. And the access is undeniable. Even Imam Ibn Hazm would not deny that there is access, because it's very simple. You snip something into your mouth, your nose, far into your nose, and you will feel the taste of it, and you will feel that you're swallowing. So it was not a matter that he was actually denying that there is an access, but he felt that it was not eating and drinking. And being, you know, the Imam of the literalists or the Zahiris, then it did not go along with his line of thinking. So eats or drinks or gets anything to his stomach through his nostrils or through any other route. Through any other route. That is somewhat controversial here. Because if you get things to your stomach, many times the scholars disagreed over issues such as what is the hollow interior of the body that will break your fasting by getting stuff into it. What's the hollow interior? The Malikis made a condition, which is a very important condition, is that that hollow interior has to have the ability to break down food. So any hollow interior in a body that does not have the ability to break down food, anything reaching it would not violate the fasting, would not compromise your fasting. Therefore, in this case, quickly, I shouldn't say this because this will take a long time, but ear drops will not break your fasting. Nose drops will not break your fasting unless you swallow, unless you overdo it and you swallow the drops. Eye drops will not break your fasting. Enemas will not break your fasting unless you give enemas that would go all the way up to your stomach and will give you nutrition. But simply enemas that would give you medications or enemas that would give you the enema for constipation or enema for some other reason, that would not break your fasting. It breaks your fasting if it is like eating in effect, giving you nutrition. And then skin preparations will not break your fasting. And all of this has been addressed by the OIC, and I am giving you the very position of the OIC, the Fiqh Assembly of the Organization of Islamic Conference. Fiqh Assembly of the Organization of Islamic Conference. Skin preparations will not break your fasting. Injections will only break your fasting if they are nutritional. If they are not nutritional, they will not break your fasting. So, injections. We talked eye, ear, nose, drops, sublingual. If you put something underneath your tongue and it completely melts, you do not need to swallow it, does not break your fasting. Inhalers will not break your fasting. And why would inhalers not break your fasting? You can actually get some of this mist into your stomach. But whatever that will get to your stomach is very, very minimal. Very, very minimal. And it's not nutritious. And people use this to treat themselves from asthma. So ease and, you know, making concessions is warranted in this case. But if someone smoked a cigarette, a little, it just, he broke his fasting. What's the difference here between that smoke and the inhaler? In fact, the inhaler will get more into you than that smoke. But that person does not deserve the making of concession, because it's already haram to smoke. So, but the other person who has asthma is the one who deserves the making of concession. Okay. So I think that we've covered pretty much all of the medical interventions here. Endoscopy. I mean, why don't you just break your fasting? If you need it, break your fasting. If you do not need it, don't have endoscopy. Because endoscopy really is, you know, but according to Imam Taymiyyah, since it's not nutritional, it doesn't break your fasting. According to the Hanafis, since it goes in and out, it does not break your fasting. In order for them to break your fasting, it has to stay in. What's that? Not necessarily. You can use a little bit of lubrication. The lubrication does not necessarily need to get in your stomach. But at any rate, you probably don't need it. Like if you really need endoscopy, have it and break your fasting. And if you don't need it, if it is elective, wait until... the same applies to dental work. Dental work per se will not break your fasting. But the chances that you will break your fasting are high because of the water that you use and so on and so forth. You can spit. You keep spitting and so on. But you may swallow the water. Therefore, if it is elective, wait. If it is urgent, something has to be done, break your fasting. You're sick, you need to do it, do it, and then make up by another day. Or intentionally vomits or masturbate. Intentionally vomits. Because the Prophet ﷺ said, مَنْ اسْتَقَاءَ عَامِدًا فَعَلَيْهِ الْقَضَاءُ وَمَنْ ذَرَعَهُ الْقَيْءُ فَلَا قَضَاءَ عَلَيْهِ مَنْ اسْتَقَاءَ عَامِدًا. He who gags himself until he vomits intentionally, he has to make up for that day. And he who vomits, or he who is overwhelmed by nausea and vomits, does not have to make up. In other words, his fasting is still valid. So your fasting is valid unless your vomiting is intentional by you gagging yourself. Or masturbate. The majority of the scholars say that masturbation is haram. There is a significant minority who say masturbation is not haram. It's up in the, you know, this is not a settled matter. This is a very controversial matter. Yet, whether it's haram or not haram, does it break your fasting? Ibn Hazm says it doesn't. And the vast majority say it does. I think that even if it is not haram, it does break your fasting. Because you know, there is a hadith in Bukhari in which the Prophet ﷺ said it's a divine hadith, hadith Qudsi. The Prophet is reporting from Allah, Azza wa Jal, may he be exalted, that he said about the fasting person, يَدَعُ طَعَامَهُ وَشَرَابَهُ وَشَهْوَتَهُ لِأَجْلِ. He abandons or forsakes his food and drink and sexual desire for my sake. So in this case, the person who masturbates did not actually forsake his sexual desire for Allah's sake. Then it does break the fasting, whether it's haram or not. Or kissed or touched the opposite sex and subsequently ejaculated semen or had mazi. If he kissed or touched the opposite sex and subsequently ejaculated semen, that is by the vast majority a fast nullifier that breaks your fasting. But mazi is a different story for two reasons. Mazi is controversial, which is the penile discharge that's not semen, the non-seminal penile discharge, if you can remember that. Non-seminal penile discharge, that's mazi. Now, mazi is a little bit different story. Why? Because of two reasons. Number one, mazi does not come out with the climax versus mani, which comes out with the climax. So this one attained his desire. The one who is ejaculated mani semen attained his desire. The one who had penile discharge did not necessarily attain his desire or the climax of the sexual desire. That's the first reason. The second reason is mazi is more frequent than mani. what are the chances that someone will touch his wife and ejaculate semen? Touching doesn't do this. But mazi could happen, particularly to certain people. Mazi is more frequent, could happen particularly with certain people. Therefore, if touching and kissing is permissible, and it is permissible, and the Prophet did, you know, kiss his wife while fasting, if touching and kissing is permissible, then mazi does not break your fasting. Because if it was permissible, then the mazi is not an infrequent consequence of this. Is not an infrequent. It is a frequent consequence of touching. Therefore, the stronger position is that ejaculation only. Because ejaculation is less frequent, and if it happened, it means that it was not simple touching at all that caused it. Or had hijama, which is cupping with bloodletting, or did it to someone else. That is one of the peculiarities or one of the singular positions of the Hanbali madhab. You know, there are certain, in every madhab you have singular positions or peculiar positions in which the madhab is in this a conflict with the vast majority, with the other three madhab and the vast majority. Now, in the Hanbali madhab, you have things like, you know, when they say that if you eat camel's meat, you break your wudu. That's one of the singular positions. That's another one of the singular positions. Hijama, which is the act of cupping with bloodletting. Now, you have conflicting reports in this regard. One of the reports is that in one of the reports, the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam said, "Aftar al hajim wal mahjum," the one who's doing hijama and the one who's having it done to him have both broke their fasting. In a different report, Abdullah ibn Abbas reports that the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam ihtajama bayna Makkah wal Madinah wa huwa sa'im. That the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam had hijama done to him between Mecca and Medina while fasting. And there are other reports also from the Sahaba in which they said that this used to be in the beginning. ثم رخص في الحجامة. Then in hijama, it was made permissible to have hijama while fasting. And this is from Anas ibn Malik radiallahu anhu. And if you remember that Anas was younger and Abdullah ibn Abbas was younger, it gives a little bit of strength to the people who say that this was in the beginning and then it was abrogated. But it does not give them complete, it doesn't give that position complete strength, because the abrogation needs to, when you want to establish that one report abrogates the other, you need to have dates. But sometimes when you have, like, you know, two of the younger companions reporting something that's in conflict with something else, that gives a little bit of strength to the report by the younger companions. Not because they were younger, because what they are reporting is from the latter part of his life, sallallahu alaihi wasallam. So that is why it may take a stronger, it may be stronger. So how do you reconcile between the two? To reconcile between these reports, different ways of reconciliation, and I'll tell you some of them because it just shows you the beauty of reconciling. Some of the scholars found a report that the Prophet ﷺ said after al hajim wal mahjum, when he found the hajim and mahjum making ghiba, and that actually is a report that there was hajim and mahjum and they were making ghiba, backbiting. The Prophet said after al hajim wal mahjum, they broke their fasting because of the ghiba, not because of the hijama, according to some of the scholars. But it would be somewhat still difficult to reconcile, because according to these scholars themselves, ghiba does not break your fasting, or backbiting does not break your fasting. Backbiting breaks your fasting according to Ibn Hazm and the Zahiris, the literalists. Sin breaks your fasting. No, because sin to them, because the Prophet ﷺ said, مَنْ لَمْ يَضَعَ الْقَوْلَ الزُّورَ الْعَمَلْ بِهِ فَلَيْسَ لِلَّهِ حَاجَ أَنْ يَضَعَ طَعَامَهُ وَشَرَابَهُ. He who does not abandon or forsake or give up falsehood, making false statements and acting for evil or falsehood, then Allah does not need him to abandon or forsake his food and drink. So he took this, you know, to heart, and they applied it. Now, it certainly compromises your reward greatly, but according to the vast majority of the scholars, sin per se does not break your fasting. So in this case, these scholars who said they were making riba, there is still an issue here that needs to be resolved. Some of the scholars said, aftara does not mean that they broke the fasting, because it is known for Arabs to use, like when you say halakta, you're destroyed. It does not mean that you are actually destroyed, but you will become destroyed. You've done what will lead you to destruction, what will lead you to destruction. When they used to call Abdullah ibn Umm Maktoum, for instance, to come and make the Fajr prayer, they would say to him, what? Asbahta asbah. Asbahta asbah, meaning the morning is in, the morning is in. Or it is morning, it is morning. It's actually not morning. They are actually waking him up so that he's ready, so that when it is morning, they're calling him to make the adhan, so that when he gets to the place where he will make the adhan, he will be making the adhan on time. So in this case, after al-hajj al-mahjumi, they almost broke their fasting. And that's true. Why? Because the al-mahjum, the one who's having the bloodletting being done to him, will get weak for the rest of the day. And if you understand the difficulty of fasting in the middle of, you know, the desert on a long summer day, and you have to go to work also, it's not like you're staying home, you have to go to work, you'll understand that, you know, if you do bloodletting and you get yourself a little bit weaker, then you're getting too close to the red line here. As for the one who is making the hijama, well, he's doing it to his brother. And also, they used to suction the blood with their mouth. You know, and so there is some likelihood that he will swallow some blood. And they used to do that. This used to happen. The stronger position is that hijama, to reconcile, the stronger position is that hijama is disliked, but does not break your fasting. Disliked in Ramadan, but does not break your fasting. Disliked for several reasons. Most importantly, that it will weaken you, and it will make you more prone to breaking your fast. What about blood work? You know, blood work, particularly if it's a blood test and it's just like, you know, a little bit of blood, like 5 mLs or something, then it is likely okay. But blood donation would be disliked, because it's like hijama, it would weaken you like hijama. Does not completely break your fasting, but it would be disliked. And if he did it absent-mindedly or was forced into it, his fast does not become nullified. You have to remember there are two big ahadith that they're principal ahadith. Remember them by heart, because it makes the understanding of the whole religion very, very easy. When it comes to exemptions, when it comes to concessions, when it comes to the mercy and justice of Islam, there are beautiful ahadith. One hadith is, رفع عن أمتي الخطأ ونسيان مستكره عليه. The other hadith is, the first hadith is, عفي عن أمتي خطأ ونسيان مستكره عليه. And the second hadith is, رفع القلم عن ثلاث, عن النائم حتى يستيقظ والمجنون حتى يعقل والصبي حتى يبلغ. The first hadith is, my ummah was exempt, was pardoned with regard to that which they do by mistake, absent-mindedly, or under compulsion. My ummah was pardoned with regard to that which they do by mistake, absent-mindedly, or under compulsion. The other hadith is, the pen has been lifted. In other words, three people will not be accountable. Three individuals will not be accountable, will not be held accountable. The one asleep until he wakes up. And that includes the one who is insane, you know, and the one who is in coma, and so on. وَالنَّعْمْ حَتَى يَسْتَيْقَبْ وَالْمَجْنُونَ حَتَى يَعْقَدْ. And the one who is insane until he recovers. And the one, the child, صَبِّي حَتَّى يَحْتَلِمْ. And the child until he reaches puberty. So, but, you know, the one who is in coma is like the one who is asleep, or like the one who is insane. If you make him like the one who is asleep, then when he wakes up from his coma, he has to make up for everything. And if you make him like the one who is insane, then when he wakes up from his coma, he does not need to make up for anything that he missed in his coma. It is more merciful, and it's likely the stronger position that you treat him like the one who's insane. Particularly the coma nowadays can last for many months. Then if he wakes up and he thought of you, we've been actually in coma for a couple of years, and now we want you to pray, you know, 5 times 700 and some days. So it may be a sort of hardship. Therefore, in this case, he is more like the one who's insane, not like the one who's asleep. For how long can he sleep? Okay, so these two ahadith are very beautiful ahadith. Remember them. They're principal ahadith in the understanding of the deen. So, and if he did it absentmindedly or was forced into it, the fast does not become nullified. And then he will give you examples. The scholars used to give qaida, used to give the principle, and then they used to give amthira, examples. So that the examples are like training for you. But if you get stuck to the example and forget about the principle, then you will not be able to have good understanding of the religion. So what's all of this? And if flies flew into his mouth, or dust came into his mouth, or he made madmada, mouth rinsing, or istinshaq, which is sniffing water, you know, into his nostrils and so on, and water reached, the water reaches his pharynx, or if he thought about sex and ejaculated, or put drops into his urethra, or had a wet dream, or was overwhelmed by vomiting, his fast does not become nullified. The connecting thread in all of them, except for the one about drops into his urethra. What is the connected thread? Not intentional. And you do not break your fast unless you are intending to do something that breaks your fast. All is not intentional. All is not intentional. So that's the connecting thread. The urethra part is because it does not get into your hollow interior, according to his understanding, which is correct in this case. وَمَنْ أَكْلَ يَظُنُّهُ لَيْلًا فَبَانَ نَهَارًا. Okay, don't worry about the PowerPoint. وَمَنْ أَكْلَ يَظُنُّهُ لَيْلًا فَبَانَ نَهَارًا. If you eat thinking that it is still night, and it turns out to be day, then you are, did you break your fasting? No, you did not. But what if you eat before Maghrib thinking that it is night and it is actually day? Do you break your fasting? According to Ibn Qudama, yes. And what's the difference between the two examples? And if you understand, you know, the principle, you will not be lost. Because if you don't understand the principle, or his principle, may not be the right principle to apply here. But his principle is, well, it was night until proven otherwise. It was night, right? Then it continues to be night until by certainty, until you're certain it's day. But the other example is different. It is before Maghrib. So it was day, therefore you should not break your fasting until you reach that conclusion by certainty, that it is actually night. So it continues to be day. That has to do with two principles that are very important. One of them is that certainty is not negated by doubt. Certainty is not al-yaqeen, la yazul bishak. Certainty is not negated by doubt. What's the other principle that is very important here? It's called presumption of continuity. Istishhab. Presumption of continuity. Because if it is night, then you presume it that it is night, 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 until it's clear that it is day. If it is day, then you presume it is day, 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 until it is clear that it is night. Presumption of continuity. That's his principle. But there is, keep in mind, that juristic preference, which is istihsan, is to choose a position that is technically weaker over a position that is technically stronger before, because the first one is more in conformity with the objectives of the Sharia, and is more conducive to equity. More conducive to equity. In this case, many scholars chose that both examples are the same. If the person who ate before Maghrib did his best, he really thought it was Maghrib. He did his best. But it was not Maghrib. But he did his best. In this case, the equity of Sharia is to treat them similarly. The equity of Sharia is to treat them similarly, because that person who ate before Maghrib, he really did his best. He did not make it, he did not mean to offend the Sharia. And in this case, it would be equitable that the Sharia treats them similarly. And that is the position of the people who would treat them similarly and say that both of them did not break their fasting, so as long as they have done their best. فَالْفَرِيَةَ أَثَرَ فِي اللَّهِ يَا لَكُمْ سُبْحَانَكَ اللَّهُمَّ وَبِحَمْدِكَ أَشْهَدُ أَنْ لَا إِلَهَ إِلَّا أَنْتَ أَسْتَغْفِرُكَ وَأَتُوبُ إِلَيْكَ.